Welcome to episode 90. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, as we continue to progress towards BALINT for dental therapists and for medical scientists, which is an agreement that will cover dietitians, psychologists, pharmacists, audiologists, and others. We are continuing to seek to resolve the last remaining concerns so far as the dental agreement for community health and the allied health professionals agreement, and we look forward to doing that very shortly. There is also a meeting for our community health HR and IR managers that occurs on this Wednesday. With respect to our health service members, we're continuing to meet with and speak with individual members with regards to the draft schedule that's proposed for saved conditions applying to medical specialists. We have our monthly meeting with DHHS on Tuesday, and the Health and Allied SDPPWG meets on Wednesday, as does the Allied Health Professionals SDPPWG, and there's also a meeting of the Mental Health Reference Group on that day. The Payroll Reference Group, which has now been running for a number of months, is scheduled to meet this Thursday. And on Friday, we're attending what was commonly referred to as Warrinmang, but this year will be in a different location. I'm referring to the Rural and Regional HRIR Managers Conference that occurs each year in regional Victoria. We're looking forward to heading up to Creswick for that day to meet with members. As always, all of our activities are summarised through the VHA Community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. That's why I'm saved. I'm saved. People, let me tell you about a kingdom come, you know I'm saved. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is Senior Workplace Relations Consultant Daniel Pullen. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart.
Daniel, will you do the honours and reveal the clue for this week's discussion?
Of course.
And for the benefit of those people who are watching, if you could hold that up, and for the benefit of those who are listening to this podcast, describe the object.
It is a book titled Journey to the Centre of the Earth.
By?
Vintage Verne?
Jules Verne. Daniel, you break my heart. The great thing about the cover for this is that it's in 3D, and there are these very handy 3D glasses.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, look, on the basis of that particular clue, what would you say is the subject for today's discussion?
Is it a picture book, or it's just the cover?
It's just the cover.
Just the cover.
Yeah, the words themselves are not in 3D.
Okay, no, that's pretty cool. You've suitably distracted me with these 3D glasses.
Excellent.
I would say, usually I rely on saying music therapy, but I think the clue is clearly not music therapy, so we're going to... I'm not really sure. I really can't put my finger on it this time, Stuart.
That really is a disappointing effort, Daniel. This is a book, really, that is a classic book, and the Journey to the Centre of the Earth, it tells you what the book is about right there in the title. And it's really about a guy called Professor Lindenbrook and his journey to discover things that are subterranean and to bring into the light things that have previously been mysterious. And that really brings us to today's subject, which are the development of the saving schedules for medical specialists. We'll be taking things that have previously been hidden, impenetrable, subterranean, and bringing them into the light through that kind of process. So we've discussed this subject just briefly in earlier podcasts, but today we're going to take something of a closer look. There are two objectives from today's podcast to share with members our initial observations to date about the draft schedules as prepared by the AMA and to talk through the process from this point in.
Sure. So let's start from the start. So why are we talking about saved provisions?
So the 2013 Medical Specialists Agreement at Clause 6 saved pre-existing entitlements with a number of exceptions.
And what are those exceptions?
Well, the first thing to say is that there are multiple exceptions. Firstly, a pre-existing entitlement cannot contravene any law.
And that sounds reasonable.
And it cannot have an effect either directly or indirectly of increasing the operating net costs of any health service above the net costs directly attributable to the implementation of the terms of the agreement.
So what does that mean in practical terms?
This isn't something that the parties have had to address before. So I suspect the meaning of that particular exception will become clear through this process.
Are there other exceptions?
There are. Mm-hmm. A pre-existing term cannot derogate from the requirements of the agreement and cannot have the effect either directly or indirectly of providing a monetary benefit to the doctor inconsistent with, that is, greater or less than, that provided under Clause 31, the remuneration clause. So that's really a way of saying, particularly in terms of conditions, that the save conditions can't be under the agreement, and in terms of remuneration, it can't provide for less or more than what's prescribed by the agreement. I should add, though, that calling it a savings clause is somewhat misleading. There are circumstances where it may operate differently to most savings provisions.
So those who aren't familiar with the term savings, and you were just touching on it then, what does it mean in an industrial context?
So it's really common for agreements to have a savings clause, very, very common. And a savings term is generally one that preserves pre-existing conditions that exceed those prescribed by the agreement itself.
So doesn't that defeat the purpose of an agreement?
Not really. Generally, the purpose of an agreement is to lift the minimum floor in terms of industrial entitlements in a uniform manner. And it's true that improvements are sometimes offset by reductions, but a savings provision doesn't prevent that from occurring. It doesn't prevent deliberate offsets or reductions. Mm-hmm. What it's seeking to do is to prevent inadvertent reductions.
So which clauses are we talking about?
So Clause 6 of the 2013 agreement and Clause 7 of the current specialists agreement.
Right, so what should people understand about the savings provisions in these two agreements?
So in terms of the two agreements, the first thing that people should understand is that they save the same things, no more, no less. So what was saved in 2013 is still saved in 2018.
So that the bar for what is saved has stayed the same?
That's correct.
Right, and what else should people understand?
I think some of the history is important. Mm-hmm. So before 2013, bargaining for medical specialists was a difficult and fractured process at times, one that sometimes saw bargaining at the enterprise, individual enterprise workplace level, rather than on an industry level.
So what's so bad about that? That sounds like textbook bargaining.
If members have ever wondered what would happen if industry bargaining didn't exist, then take a look at the history of bargaining for medical specialists. It resulted in a broad proliferation of disparate outcomes.
So what does that mean in practical terms?
It means that there's a lack of consistency across the sector with respect to some terms and conditions, and that lack of consistency had the effect of empowering the bargaining agent with respect to medical specialists, and the way that that manifested itself was that the bargaining agent could effectively play one hospital off against another to get a better outcome.
And how would have that occurred? How so?
It meant that a bargaining agent could go to one hospital and say to that hospital that they need to agree to certain terms and conditions because another hospital has just agreed to those, and that their medical specialists are aware of those outcomes and are angry and frustrated that those outcomes are not being matched. And it may well be that that hospital then pushed to go further in order to not just match but placate their staff, and then that outcome would then be presented to the next hospital as being the industry standard and so on and so forth until it became more and more elaborate.
So in 2013, there was a move back to an industry approach for bargaining for this group.
There was, and that shift back to an industry approach in an agreement that was actually approved by the Commission represented a substantial achievement. But it meant that it was also necessary to address the disparate terms and conditions that had sprung up over the years at different health services.
And I guess that brings us neatly to the savings provisions in the 2013 and 2018 agreements.
It does.
So what does this mean with respect to what it purports to save?
So what are the agreements purport to save are pre-existing entitlements in operation immediately prior to the commencement of the 2013 Specialists Agreement.
So does that include expired certified agreements? And how can these continue to operate when only one enterprise agreement can operate at a time? Doesn't that mean that the previous agreement lapses?
So it is true that only one agreement can operate at a time. That's true of all enterprise agreements. However, it doesn't mean that the terms of an expired enterprise agreement can't be preserved by reference, and that's what's going on here.
Okay. So is that unique just to the medical specialist agreement?
So that approach, in terms of the scale of it, it's unique to the medical specialist agreement, but the principle is common. So not long ago, most of our agreements had provisions that sought to save terms of expired organisational change agreements, for example.
So the agreements have expired and have been replaced, but they no longer operated.
But the terms or some terms were preserved by the then-present agreement. Mm-hmm. I have seen people assert that the terms of expired agreements should be ignored because only one agreement can ever operate at a time. The problem with that advice is that it means that the savings clause that the parties agreed to would have no work to do. And whatever the intention of the parties in creating the savings provision in 2013, it would be fair to say that they weren't intending that the clause should have no effect.
So you said earlier that the 2013 and the current 2018 agreement saves the same things.
That's correct. The bar has not been lifted.
Right. So what's different in terms of the savings provisions from the 2013 to the current 2018 medical specialist agreement?
So in addition to saving the same things, what we're going to do is go through an exercise where we identify what those items are. That is, take things that are currently not clear and make them clear.
So why aren't they clear?
Two reasons. There's some significant complexity at work in terms of the sheer number of terms and their age, and that it's by reference. And it's become clear that there are many instances that have arisen where there is no agreement between the parties as to what is saved and what is not.
So it appears that there was no agreement as to what the agreement term meant and how it operated.
That's a fair description. At a certain point, it's difficult to refer to an agreement as an agreement if the terms aren't agreed.
So the process of identifying what is and what isn't saved, this is in response to that?
It is. It is about sorting out the relevant terms and creating certainty, and ultimately it might be a step towards creating greater uniformity in terms of terms and conditions applying to medical specialists through a collective agreement.
Right, so what's happened so far?
Members will recall that during bargaining, there was a request to consider a draft schedule prepared by the AMA that represented, from their perspective, the matters that had been saved.
And what happened?
When that request was made, there was a very short time frame for members to respond, and our sense was that trying to sort through that material in a couple of days was likely to be impractical.
Did members confirm as much? I mean, on the receiving end of it, I know that there was some strong feelings from members.
I'm mindful that some of the bruising is yet to heal.
Yes.
But there was an unequivocal response that confirmed our instinct, which was that that was too short a time, and it was a better thing to defer that and go through a more orderly and considered process during the life of the agreement.
So I'm mindful that the agreement says this process should be done in the first 6 months after the agreement comes into effect. That takes us to February. So what happens if it's not done by then?
So obviously we'll do our very best to meet that particular time frame. But what I'm mindful of with regards to this exercise and what makes it different to so many exercises that occur during the life of the agreement is that it actually makes no difference in terms of what is saved and what is not. Mm. It's simply the articulation of what is saved. Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether or not the exercise is complete by February or not, those things that were saved, that are articulated to be saved, were saved back in 2013. And nothing has changed, simply the expression of those items in writing.
So strictly speaking, it could end up at the Commission?
There is a provision for that, that if we can't agree as to whether a term is saved or not, we'll deal with that in a moment.
So where are things up to now?
So the AMA has prepared schedules or draft schedules applying to 21 health services in total.
Mm-hmm. So those schedules are the AMA's perspective as to what is safe, not a document that we've agreed to.
That's correct, and I really need to emphasise that it represents the AMA's perspective. The draft schedules are not something that we've agreed to at this time.
And those draft schedules have been distributed to the relevant members?
That's correct, and that's really for a very specific purpose. You'll recall that I referred to the age of some of the conditions earlier.
Mm. It did seem somewhat ageist, I must say, but I did let it slide.
Some of the terms that we're talking about are a decade and a half old, and a lot happens at a health service in that period of time.
And what do you mean by that?
Hospitals don't sit still, and medical specialists don't sit still. Here we have a circumstance where previously agreed terms can be altered, and the agreement provides for this, can be altered by way of a review of pre-existing entitlements where that is agreed by the majority of doctors. That is, terms that would otherwise be pre-existing entitlements may have been replaced at the workplace level.
And if that had happened, we wouldn't know, would we?
That's right, we wouldn't know. And it's also possible that the AMA wouldn't be aware either. They're the ones who have prepared these schedules. We need this process to sort out which terms are no longer relevant, which have no longer have work to do, because they've been replaced by other terms at the workplace level as a result of a review.
So members have received those draft schedules?
That's correct. And we're in the process now of booking time with individual members to discuss their schedule with them.
So by discuss, what does that mean?
It means that we'll be outlining our own preliminary view with regards to the terms, having reviewed the draft schedule, but we'll be seeking instruction from members regarding those terms that have been replaced. That is, we want members to tell us which terms have been replaced.
And only members could give us that information.
That's correct.
So what about VHIA's review of the items?
So the schedules that we have been provided, the draft schedules, currently contain more than 300 separate items for review. So it's been a time-consuming process for us so far.
And what have we learned?
Well, so far what we've learned is that there are terms that have been included in the draft schedules that, from our perspective, don't have any work to do.
And what are some examples of those?
A really straightforward example would be jury service. Mm-hmm. A lot of the schedules have proposed clauses for jury service. And from what I can tell, that those clauses don't do any more than the Act does. That is, there's nothing to preserve. There are provisions that require the development, for example, of a telephone protocol 15 years ago. And that's an obligation that arose at a point in time. Either it's happened or it hasn't. It was supposed to happen 15 years ago, but there's no value in restating an obligation that should have been met a decade and a half ago.
For sure. And are there any other examples?
There are lots of examples. There are some superannuation provisions that require the employer to make contributions in accordance with the law. Generally speaking, you don't need to state in an enterprise agreement that the employer must comply with the law.
And I'd agree that an agreement probably doesn't need to say that the employer will comply with the law.
That's right. There are some termination and redundancy provisions that require close review. Some of the ones that are proposed to be saved are the same as, or less than, what is included in the agreement proper. So those are just some of the items that have jumped out for us so far.
For sure. So have we advised the AMA?
We have. We've given the AMA a preliminary outline of the items that jump out just for us. And if members are interested in seeing the kinds of clauses that came to our attention in our first review, there's a copy of that correspondence that's been posted in the specialists page of the VHIA community app.
So what else have we learned through this process?
One of the things that's become apparent is that sometimes it's difficult judge whether a particular term is more favourable or not. For example, there's a termination of employment provision that states that in the context of redundancy that a doctor is entitled to 6 months' notice.
So what else? What is the difficulty with that?
So in terms of 6 months' notice, if a specialist was made redundant, they may be, depending on the length of service, be entitled to 20 weeks severance pay. Plus 5 weeks in lieu of notice, and some of that payment would be subject to favourable tax treatment, having regard for the fact that it's a redundancy. And the challenge there is that whilst the weeks are similar, the treatment may be different, and it becomes a question, well, is there an advantage from the old clause or not?
Sure. Was there anything else?
Yes, look, there are some definite themes. For instance, A very common theme concerns a provision for Easter Saturday for those people who work Monday to Friday. It's very common to have provisions with regards to long service leave, to have an absolute right to take long service leave after 10 years rather than something that might occur by mutual agreement. And so those things seem to be common themes amongst a lot of the preserved terms.
Sure. So are there any exceptions?
Yeah, there are. And one of the interesting things about this process is you identify themes across agreements, but you also identify things that are common, terms that are outliers and are disproportionate to the terms that apply at other health services. So there are a number of those, and it gives us an opportunity to speak to each of those affected health services about those disproportionate terms, to advise them, first of all, that it's out of step with everybody else and they might be subject to a greater exposure to cost, and to talk to them about whether or not, as part of a process, as we try to get greater consistency, what kind of process we might engage in to address those disproportionate terms as we move forward.
So what value is there in identifying those terms?
It really goes to that issue of how do we address outliers. So you identify common themes, you identify those things that are uncommon, and then you talk to those members about addressing uncommon provisions.
So there'll be a process to go through each of the draft schedules to get instructions. So you mentioned earlier that savings wasn't really the right term.
Yeah, I should explain that a little bit more. So one of the interesting things about some of the pre-existing entitlements or proposed pre-existing entitlements is that they made statements to the effect that their particular rates, for example, would continue to adjust in accordance with future agreements. And that means what's unusual about a savings provisions are usually set in stone and then the agreement rises to meet them. But what's proposed here is that in some instances, and it's not universal, that the certain aspects would continue to change in response to future agreements.
So it's going to be messy.
It is going to be a messy process, but it is a once-off process, and it is part of a drive cleaning up the chaos that existed where there was bargaining at the individual workplace level, and a drive towards a single set of conditions for this important group of employees. It is something that is somewhat long overdue, but it all comes back to the basic idea that an agreement only has value if the parties actually agree. And that's what's missing in terms of these safe provisions at present.
For sure.
So, Daniel, thank you for your time today. I think we should also thank Vintage Vern, or as I prefer to refer to him as Jules Vern.
Thank you, Jules Vern.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart. That's why I'm saved. I'm saved.